This episode of the Vision Board Podcast is brought to you by Onnit. Why Onnit, you ask? Well, here's a word from Onnit's founder and CEO, Aubrey Marcus.
You know, Onnit is the company that has the tools to improve your performance. And in whatever area that you're looking for, we have something to do it. You know, it's like going to it's the Home Depot of house repair, but instead of house repair, it's body and mind repair. You know, and it's body and mind performance enhancement. It's going to that body shop and figuring out what tools that you can apply to help make your life better.
At the Vision Board Podcast, we only promote supplements that we use ourselves, and we only use the best. To give you insights, here's Johnny.
Yeah, guys, my two favorite that I take, one, Alpha Brain. Alpha Brain really helps improve mental focus and memory, and the second one I really swear by is Shroom Tech. Shroom Tech is designed to help your body with energy and cardiovascular endurance. What's your favorite, Tristan?
Johnny, the two that I love is the Warrior Buffalo Bars. I find these delicious snacks, and they're also perfect for when I'm on the road and also on the run. Also, I love the Dolce Whey. They're grass-fed whey protein isolate, perfect for my smoothies and also my post-workout shakes. Now, guys, check out the range at www.onnit.com, and please use code word VISIONBOARD for 10% off at checkout. Now, guys, enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Tristan and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Welcome back, guys. Episode 105 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell. Alongside me, Johnny Stoffgold.
What's up, Tristan? What's up, everybody? Super excited for this episode. We're bringing an Australian pretty much icon to the table.
Yeah, man. Jessica Watson. So for people that don't know who Jessica is, especially the American audience. So Jess, she's 23 years old now, but when she was 16 years old, she sailed around the world solo and unassisted.
Yeah, circumnavigated the globe and basically a engineless watercraft, right? Using just the wind sailboat by herself as a teenager. I don't know about you, but when I was 16, I definitely didn't have the skill set to do that.
Oh, I didn't. I don't even think I knew how to tie my laces, let alone try to sail a boat around the world. I think, by memory, I think it might have been 2010. I'm just trying to think back about, I think it might have been 7 years ago, maybe end of 2009, but I still remember here in Australia, like, I was already an adult, so 7 years ago, I'm in my late 20s, so just to see the actual, everyone was, the attention on this actual event was huge.
Yeah, it was international for sure.
She became a celebrity overnight, and I think there'll be some great life lessons, even from someone, you know, we've had Steve Maxwell on before, and he doesn't really like learning from younger people, but I think this is a tremendous opportunity from everyone to actually listen and take some notes from Jessica Watson.
Yeah, Jessica's still only 23, super young, has her whole life in front of her. I know she's in grad school in Melbourne. So to talk about that hindsight 2020, because, I mean, we talked to her at 33, in 10 plus years, it'll be different than what we're going to get today.
Oh, yeah.
And then so on and so forth. That's just life. So almost, I'm, you know, it's good to get her at 23. And because, you know, once again, what were you doing at 23? And already have that in your back pocket, already have that on your timeline of being, having done that, it's pretty exceptional. It has to be just an awesome, confidence booster for upcoming and, you know, more goals ahead. Pretty much the headspace of, man, I did this, I could do that.
Yeah, I think she's going to bring some real big value. So before we get Jessica on, guys, just a big thank you for everyone that's been subscribing and leaving us reviews. If you haven't done it yet, the best way to help us grow in terms of iTunes and SoundCloud is just to jump on quickly, hit that subscribe button, and also just quickly leave us a 5-star review. You can easily do that by just searching, and then once we come up on the search key, you can just leave a review that way.
Yeah, we really appreciate you guys, our fans who've been listening since jump, new fans, new listeners. If you're Android users, it literally takes 5 seconds to just search SoundCloud. It's a free app, press subscribe. Apple users, like Tristan aforementioned, iTunes Store free. Download that podcast app and search Vision Board Podcast. Leave us a 5-star review.
Definitely. So we appreciate the support. And without further ado, here is Jessica Watson. All right. Our special guest is Jessica Watson. Jessica has lived an amazing journey, which has included being the youngest person to sail non-stop and unassisted around the world at a young age of 16. In 2011, she was named Young Australian of the Year, while she was also awarded an Order of Australia in 2012. We welcome Jessica Watson. Jessica, welcome to the Vision Board Podcast.
Yeah, hello, and thank you for having me.
Excellent. Jessica, so the new year just kicked off. It's actually the second day of February. Could you share with our listeners what 2017 has in store for you, and you know, some, you know, just share with us what's going on in your life?
Wow, where to start? I suppose I've actually felt like I've had a lovely, quiet few weeks, and to get my year in order, which has been kind of wonderful to have that opportunity. Going to be a lot of study. I'm finishing a master's this year, is the plan, as it is. And I also sort of do a fair bit of speaking still and work with a little marine startup called Decky, and a fair bit of writing lined up for this year as well. And I suppose we'll see what else kind of comes along.
You just mentioned actually study and education. You're doing an MBA, right?
Yeah, that's right. So just over halfway through now, which is something I've really been enjoying. I've come to enjoy study a lot, really, for a girl who ran away from school. Basically,
originally you were were you homeschooled originally, Jessica?
I was for a few years. Well, we were sort of traveling with the family, and then my siblings went back to normal school. You know, homeschooling great when it allows you to do something, you know, like travel, but there is nothing quite like real school.
Yeah.
Although I kind of had to go back to doing distance education because I had all this sailing and training I was doing to then start around the world.
So why the MBA?
I finished my degree and I kind of wanted to keep going, and I was sort of had ideas about what I was interested in, but I didn't know exactly what I really wanted to do still. So it's kind of nice in general, and it's really given me the confidence with some things like finance and, you know, that I just didn't know a lot about, and I now feel like I've got at least enough of an idea to ask the right questions of the professionals. It's really just opened my eyes up a lot and given me a lot of confidence.
Jessica, before we came on air, Tristan and I were speaking about the comparisons and what we would do different in terms of going to university. Tristan and I both have gone, finished school, and then just taking that, speaking specifically at like the 18-year-old, finishing high school, and then, you know, our system is set for them to go straight into university. You being a really unique case of having such an amazing worldly life experience before high school, before graduation, and then now currently chasing your MBA in your early mid 20s. What's your opinion on do you think that education is something for every 18-year-old to go right from high school, or do you think there should be a gap year travel in between?
Look, it's entirely up to the individual. You know, for me, I was quite excited to get into a degree because I missed out on that kind of formal schooling. And I suppose I said to start with, I felt like I had something to prove to myself. But yeah, it's completely up to the individual, and certainly a gap year and doing something else is wonderful for some people. I know in my experience, you know, a lot of people have, you know, not quite as glowing things to say about general degrees, but that's what I did, and I really, really enjoyed that because it gave me the opportunity to try a few different things out. And I sort of started out, you know, thinking I would do something quite different to what I ended up majoring in. So I found that process really useful because I was able to kind of change my mind a few times.
Yeah, when you did your sailing, when you did your trip, what grade were you? Did you have to miss an entire year of school?
Pretty much, yeah. So I was 16, which in Queensland, you know, I should have been going into year 10, I believe.
Oh.
Even 11, really. Those 2 years there were a bit haphazard because you have to remember it wasn't as simple as just leaving school and getting on a boat and sailing around the world. There were years and years of, you know, full-time preparation. And, you know, a lot of that was courses and, you know, marine survival and things like that, mixed with a little bit of schoolwork along the way.
Yeah.
So I was kind of treading water, keeping up with the schooling for a little while there. And I got back from the trip and I sort of did this little intensive night school course for a while, which helped me catch up a bit. But then, as I said, the degree was really a chance to kind of go, all right, I've got something to prove to myself here that I can do this.
Do you remember, was there a specific moment that came to fruition when the plan was put into motion to go after this goal of yours?
I was 11 when I first got the idea. Mum read me a book. I had those parents who like to tell their kids they could do anything they set their minds to, and then they kind of didn't realize quite they were getting into this much.
You were serious.
Yeah, exactly. I think they went, oh wow. When we say you can do anything, I do remember it was quite clear at that age that I went, wow, you know, I thought about it for a few years and then I started telling people. But as to an exact moment, I think once I started saying it, once I started telling people, it was happening one way or the other. It was completely audacious, that total belief that this was going to happen one way or the other. But I think that's really what it took.
So did you have to, like, obviously you said that you got the idea at age 11. In terms of it actually becoming a reality, was it like, were you age 14 when you started pestering your parents that you have to do this? Like, what was the process like that?
The process was really just learning as much as I could, and getting the experience. So from a pretty early age, I'd started, you know, kind of lining up these sailing trips and started surrounding myself by people who could help and, you know, were wonderful mentors and advisors. And I think it got to the point, you know, I would have been as late as sort of when I was 15, where Dad particularly had this kind of moment where he went, oh, this is really happening. Oh, dear. I think, you know, a bit of advice for parents out there, if your kid comes to you with a crazy dream like this, make sure you stomp it out nice and quickly, because the problem Dad put himself in, this position he put himself in, was that he realized that saying no at that point would have completely destroyed me. I was living and breathing this. I was so obsessed. Pretty cruel of me to do that, really, looking back. But, you know, he just couldn't say no, because it meant everything to me at that point.
So I've never traveled, or I've never been on a boat in the open water alone before, but I've done some pretty extensive personal development, leadership, used to teach it. Sometimes I look back in hindsight and I tell myself, wow, I can't believe I actually did that. Looking back, hindsight being 20/20, what you achieved on that grand scale, would you do it again?
I would, yeah, definitely. There's not really the excuse to do a voyage quite like that ever again. You know, it's quite unique being able to spend that much time by yourself and sort of doing it without stops. So next time I want to do it, it will be stopping. It'll probably be with at least one other person, maybe a few, and it'll be a bit different. It's such a unique kind of, it's interesting. I know a lot of people who've done sort of similar voyages with stops, and they say, oh, I'd love to do it nonstop. And I'm going, I want to do it with stops this time. So
do you ever hear the water? Like, in a sense of, like, for me, hiking through the Grand Canyon, there's just a stillness that's so deafening loud. And I miss it. Is there ever a time where, like, in your everyday life, where a switch will go on and you put yourself back on that boat?
Yeah, I mean, the water is still very much a part of my life. It's never quiet on the water. I think that surprises people. You'd be amazed at how much noise there is, kind of from the roar and the movement of the water, and then, of course, the wind most of the time as well. I miss it, yes. I do get out there plenty still, and I suppose it's still my kind of ultimate happy place, you know, that kind of thing you use in your head when you're at the dentist or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, I can kind of take myself back, and it is still really clear, which is really special, and I hope I never lose that.
Yeah, you spoke about, you know, being by yourself. What was the biggest thing you learned about yourself when you were away by yourself?
You know, I mean, I had an amazing team of mentors, people who'd done similar things or, in a way, quite different things, you know, like kayaking or walking to the South Pole. And I drew on all of those experiences, and that was incredibly helpful, knowing what to expect sort of mentally. I also spent a lot of time working with a sports psychiatrist who was incredibly helpful. She could really only teach me positive thought strategies, but they were incredibly effective. But I think I learned more before I actually left on the voyage, because I'd sort of got my head around it mentally before I actually set off. And it was really hard to get to that start line. All of the preparation, finding the support, the sponsors, fair bit of media criticism. And I hit that ship as well just before I actually set off on the voyage, and that was pretty horrendous. So by the time I actually came to set off, it was more, okay, I'm here now. This is what I was expecting. Let's get on with it. I'm probably downplaying some of the tough times, but honestly, it was harder to get to the start line than the voyage itself.
Yeah.
I know that your answer to this question will change as the years go on, but you at 23 going to be 24 now, and if you had your 16-year-old version in front of you right now, what bit of advice would you give her?
I mean, there's so many things. There's so much
in regards to the voyage
out there, and
yeah, in regards to the voyage.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. The thing I'd probably say, and it's sort of, you know, there's so many important bits of information and lessons learned from so many different people. But really, the big thing a lot of people told me, and that I would remind myself, is actually remember to enjoy it, because we work so hard on these things, and you know, I was pretty serious about it all. And if you don't actually stop and let yourself have that moment where you know, you sort of pat yourself on the back and go, hey, I'm actually here, I'm actually doing this thing I've worked so hard for, I think it's important to actually let it kind of sink in.
What do you think has been the biggest catalyst for your mindset? I mean, being, you're still so young, but taking you back when you were 11, I know you said your parents were really open in conversation to have you believe in dreams and, you know, go for things that you want to do. Was it, did it start there? Was it, you know, was it a movie? Was it a book? And to have that mindset now, do you feel still that you can accomplish anything?
Yeah, I suppose that's exactly it. Is I did have this lovely support, you know, when I was younger and was told I could do anything. I particularly was when I was young, very dyslexic. So that's part of the reason Mum read to me all the time. And it was this particular book, Jesse Martin, who'd sailed around the world as an 18-year-old. And the thing that really stood out to me about his book, because I've been read lots of other adventure stories and all sorts of other things, but the difference with this book was that I realised he was just a normal guy as well as this incredible adventurer. It was someone I could relate to, and I realised, oh, you know, he could be the guy who lives next door. And that just gave me this kind of thought that, well, these people are all amazing, but they're also ordinary, they're also normal. What could I do? What, who could I be? And, yeah, realising, I think that's really important, realising that you can actually be one of these people who, you know, are your heroes. And it's been amazing. In the years since the voyage, I've been able to meet so many of my own heroes and then people, as you said, like Sir Richard Branson. And you get to meet them and you go, wow, they're just as amazing in person. But they are also just human. You know, they are just like any of us. And that's really special to realise and very powerful to realise that, you know, you could be any of these people.
Did you get opportunity to meet Jesse Martin before you actually went on the voyage?
Yeah, he was quite supportive, and he was one of the quite a few people I was able to spend quite a lot of time talking to about, you know, the mental challenges and then all the sort of other aspects of the voyage too, just really practical advice, which is really helpful and pretty amazing when you're sort of, yeah, meeting this person who's your hero and then sort of becoming friends, and it's really special and kind of realizing, you know, when I had him on my boat and I realized, how cool is this? Yeah, he's my childhood hero, and then going sailing with him.
Have you still got the boat?
No, she's actually in the Brisbane Maritime Museum, which is a beautiful place for her, because love it a bit, but I've been too busy for a boat in the last few years, and she was sort of set up for one purpose a little bit there.
Well, I guess you'll always be part of history down there too.
Yeah, still a bit odd and strange. In a way, I kind of, yeah, it's still hard to think of myself like that, yeah.
What sort of skill set at 16... during the moments on that boat of, like, maybe panic, maybe not danger, more importantly, what type of discipline mentally, were you meditating before you went on this boat? Did you have any sort of structure or advice that somebody had given you prior to do while you were alone if there was a sort of risk of danger that, you know, showed its face?
It all really came down to preparation was the big thing. You know, if you put me in any boat in the middle of any ocean right now, I would be utterly terrified. But it was this boat that I had and how perfectly set up she was. Not necessarily the world's most expensive and amazing equipment, but just the way we set her up. Every single screw on that boat was so perfect and so carefully thought out. And that gave me the confidence in those situations, you know, when there are, you know, really terrible conditions and 10-meter waves, to go, the boat's got this. And that's what gave me the confidence completely. You know, there are a lot of other things, as I said, that sort of positive thinking, that was probably more important, more critical in the moments when you're just bored and a bit depressed than the terrifying ones. But fear is an interesting one, because I did come from being this little girl who was scared of everything. And the way I sort of, you know, dealt with that to then become somebody who could deal with those situations was quite simply just to realise that fear is a choice. I, you know, used to pretend I was, you know, not scared to start with, and then all of a sudden you realise you do actually have this. But it is really, really important to realize it's a choice. You know, the one thing you can actually control is what goes on in your head. And that's, again, a very powerful thing to sort of realize. And it was kind of a particular moment in this really bad storm in the Atlantic Ocean when I did realize that after the boat had been rolled upside down a couple of times.
Just thinking on mindset, Jessica, you know, you achieved such a major goal at only 16 years of age. Was it difficult to set other goals once you were back? And, you know, now you're 23 now. Like, what's your major goals moving forward?
Look, there's a load of them. And it's something that kind of drives me a little bit mad is because so often the first question people ask is, what's next? How are you going to better the voyage around the world?
Yeah.
And for me, you know, everything I've done since, getting my driver's license, finishing a degree, the Youth Sydney Hobart project I've done, the work with the United Nations World Food Programme, all of those things for me, you know, have been bettering. They've been bigger goals in their own ways than the voyage around the world. But I suppose it's probably not likely that, certainly for a while, anything's going to be as dramatic and kind of media worthy as that voyage around the world. So I can understand where people are coming from. But yeah, as I said, I've got loads of goals. There's plenty going on this year, and I love, you know, thinking about some longer term goals. And we'll wait and see what happens. I certainly love setting goals. I think I do really like to keep myself challenged and very busy with lots of things.
Tristan and I love using this platform to learn and to get insight from people like yourself, Jessica. And in 2016, could you share with us maybe a big lesson that you learned?
Oh, last year. I suppose last year for me was about sort of trying some new things and learning a lot about, it really was a year of learning, I suppose, mainly with my study, but I also took an amazing trip to the US with a youth leadership program learning about ocean and conservation issues. So I just feel like it was a bit of a, jam-packed year of kind of learning a lot. And probably, it did teach me that you've just got to jump at opportunities and you're not quite sure where they're going to end up. I sort of started out in a few things and they ended up in sort of different places. But maybe a bit of persistence as well, a bit of patience from last year is something I learned.
Do you see yourself, like the passion that led you to be that 16-year-old and where you are now, do you find yourself putting that into being a teach? Do you see yourself teaching people? Do you see yourself, you know, speaking in front of large groups forever? What sort of intrinsic feeling do you have that you could kind of feel where your future is going?
I certainly enjoy that. I love speaking to schools and things like that and sharing the story. I also love kind of putting this new perspective I've got. I know I'm only 23 now, but I feel like every year since the voyage, I've learned and changed and grown so much, which is one of the things I'm kind of most proud of is who I am each year. It's something I will enjoy for a lot longer, although I've got to be a little bit careful about just how often I do it so I don't go entirely mad. I suppose teaching and sharing is definitely something I enjoy, but I suppose I want to move away from it to some extent as well. I want to be known for other things, not necessarily known by a huge amount of people, just I need to be known for who I am and the skills that I have and what I'm doing on other projects as well.
What about daily habits, Jess? Do you have, are you quite structured? Are you more unstructured? I know you've got a lot going on with your different projects and things like that, but is there essential non-negotiables in your morning or anything like that?
The last so many years of my life have been, you know, I really realised how little routine I've ever had.
Yeah.
You know, when you're sort of constantly on the road and constantly travelling, it's been better recently because I have sort of got more study and a few more things like that that are kind of keeping me in the one place a little more often. But there's probably not any absolutely steadfast non-negotiables, but I do like to have, you know, my few minutes to kind of clear my head and read the morning news. That's something I enjoy. I think it's more just getting that time to myself every day. Normally, you know, when I'm kind of exercising or something like that, that's probably a bit of a non-negotiable. Just so important to help me sleep, I think, as well, to kind of go do something active and clear your head.
Yeah, is there any preference in, like, because our audience, obviously, with me and Johnny being trainers at the gym as well, they love gaining insights into what our guests do in terms of keeping themselves fit and healthy. Can you give us a few insights on that?
Oh, sounds like you guys have plenty of advice for me. I keep it pretty boring, really. I do a lot of walking, which is not too exciting, and then I kind of just go to the gym and like to have my earphones in and listen to podcasts and don't really want to talk to anyone or do anything too fancy. I think it's more kind of allowing my mind to wander and doing something kind of mindless enough to allow that. I love I enjoy like hiking and walking when I can get away, but really I keep it fairly boring.
What podcasts are you listening to when you're training?
I suppose what I'm studying is I try and to find something on whatever I'm studying to kind of help me give a bit more background. So, you know, economics podcasts or, a bit of everything. I have to admit it's a bit embarrassing. I do listen to a fair bit of ABC Radio and the podcasts there. I like to kind of hide that from everyone at the gym going, this is not sure I should be admitting to this is what I'm listening to.
That's interesting, actually. So where you what you're listening to and what you're studying, if you could sit down and interview one person, who would that be right now?
Oh, that's a really hard question. One single person. look, I don't know. There's some amazing, amazing people out there and very hard to choose just the one. I suppose, again, having just kind of finished this economics course, and this is incredibly boring, and the kind of reserve, the leader of the Reserve Bank would be really interesting because they would just have this incredible insight into the economy. But
just to I'm just really intrigued about the boat still, so I've just got a couple more questions just on the boat, because I've just never done it before, and I just want,
for sure,
yeah, I just need a couple questions asked, if that's okay, Jess.
Sure, sounds like you guys need to get out in the water and try some sailing.
Yeah, right? Definitely.
The water scares me.
Like, you know, you're there for months on end now. Like, what does a day on the boat look like? Like, how many hours in the day are you sailing? Like, do you wake up at a specific time? How does that work?
It's pretty varied. You're completely at the mercy of the weather conditions out there. So, you know, your day can be completely different in one part of the world or depending on what the conditions are. If you're sort of dealing with a tough situation and there's bad weather approaching or in the middle of it, it's sort of just everything's on edge. It's just waiting. You're living in, like, full wet weather gear, kind of overall little jumpsuit. You know, you're wearing your harness, you know, you've sort of got your knife and your tools kind of on you the whole time, and you're sitting there really just monitoring things like that and ready to deal with anything at any moment and kind of napping. but then you've got, you know, way more beautiful days in the Pacific Ocean where it's very relaxed. The boat's actually sailing itself pretty much completely for days on end. And, you know, I'm just reading and cooking and tinkering and fixing things on the boat. You know, there's always something that needs to be maintained. And sleep is very much napping. The research we did before I left, you know, you need that 90-minute sleep cycle a day, ideally more, yeah, at least one. And a lot of the time I was sleeping for very small amounts of time, waking up, checking things. So to do that, you sort of have to be able to nap through the day. And yeah, I actually preferred to sleep during the day because you're a bit more relaxed and, you know, the sort of the danger of the night to some extent.
What's up, guys? Be sure to pick up your free copy of Conversations with Champions. This is our free ebook, which is comprised of inspirational quotes from past guests that we've had on the show.
Get inspirational quotes from champions such as Evander Holyfield, Jonathan Thurston, Grant Cardone, Gary Vee, Larry Holmes, Mario Andretti, Anthony Mundine, Joe DeFranco, and many, many more.
To pick up your free copy now, just simply go to our website, www.divisionboardpodcast.com/ebook. Put your name and email in the slot. It takes about 10 seconds, and we'll send you the book directly to your inbox. Now back to the show.
You mentioned earlier that the boat itself was set up for your success, the nuts and bolts, everything was prepared so you could succeed. Who was the architect behind that preparation?
There were a lot of people involved. You know, I had a lot of really.
Was your father involved? Like, was your family involved in that process?
Yeah, they were. So to start with, it was sort of a few sort of key advisors and mentors. And in fact, one of these guys, who's quite an amazing adventurer in his own right, actually brought the boat for me to use for this voyage, which was an incredible gesture of support. And then this team sort of came together, and including Dad, who ended up putting a huge amount of time in because it was very important for him to see that everything was perfect. And it was this amazing team because they were all volunteers. You know, there were some sort of professionals as well involved for those very sort of specialist skills. But it was amazing, and I kind of got to the point after, you know, months of full-time work with these guys, I wasn't giving them days off. I was pretty hard taskmaster at the time. I kind of really kind of became quite concerned about how I was ever going to thank them enough for what they were doing for me. And thankfully, one of them actually sat me down and said, hey, you're looking at this the wrong way. You're not ever going to be able to thank us enough for what you're doing. It's not what it's about. It's about us sharing this voyage with you. And that was a really powerful, simple, but really powerful leadership lesson for me to realize that it's not about being able to offer anyone anything particular or being a particularly wonderful leader. It was just about sharing it with them.
Yeah.
And the lovely thing about that is by the time I actually set off, it was their voyage as well. And it really, you know, it was a solo voyage, but I say we a lot because it was this huge group of people that were so critical.
Yeah, let's stay on that actually with leadership. What good traits do you see in a leader, and what do you think your best leadership qualities are?
Look, I don't know. I suppose that was really powerful, and I think you can apply that to absolutely anything, you know, sharing a dream with people, maybe it's not used or not used as powerfully as it could be. But I think, you know, there are so many different amazing leaders. I've worked with some really amazing people who are very much sort of that coaching leadership style. And then you see on boats, obviously, situations when things are happening fast, you know, you do need to have that one person who really stands up and kind of takes charge. I really love it when you get this amazing, information flow and input from everyone that happens in a really effective way. That's pretty special when you see a crew or a team of people doing that. I'm not really sure exactly what I'd be. I would hope that it would be a bit of everything, you know, as the situation kind of required. I suppose I probably am not that traditional leader who stands at the back of a boat and yells and screams, because I quite simply don't have the voice for that over the winds. I would like to think, and I think this really came out when we were doing this Youth Sydney Hobart project, I was very much a leader who kind of set my team up and tried to give them the best resources and the best sort of support, and then really kind of helped them out, got the best out of them. And I almost felt like the race itself was a matter of sitting back, and it wasn't that easy, of course, letting them do what they were, you know, trained and ready to do, more than actually kind of having to push them, which was kind of cool.
Was that difficult to actually go from being by yourself on the single voyage to actually leading the crew on the Sydney to Hobart?
Yeah, it was certainly different. I think I remember kind of the first times we went offshore as a crew, and, you know, this was 18 to 21-year-olds, and our little bow girl, she's as tough as anything, but she's got one of the kind of scary older, sort of seeing her brother and go, oh, you know, Ben, it's funny, you're more worried for other people than you kind of are for yourself. And all the crew kind of, and I think that did become a big part of my role on board, as I was kind of you sort of in sailing, you talk about that kind of old head that is the person who is being a bit more cautious on the boat. That really became my role. It was different. It was a lot of fun. I do love sailing with people. Solo sailing is a really special, unique thing that you just don't get to have that time to yourself. So that's really special in that way. But I love sailing with crews as well.
You just mentioned fun, and I recently just finished this very interesting article from this psychologist on the different levels of fun. And she put the highest level of fun always. Yeah, it was interesting. She says, friends never look back and say, man, that amusement park 3 years ago was so fun. That loop-de-loop really got. It's like the highest level of fun always has to contain some sort of risk. So in hindsight, they say, you remember climbing Mount Everest when we almost died? That was really fun. That sort of thing. So look, and I'm sure you've had those moments on that boat. So my question is for you, what are some of the things that you miss? Like if you were to compartmentalize the 7 months that you're on the water alone, do you ever look back and kind of yearn for a specific part of that or a moment?
Oh, yeah, there's lots of little things. And, yeah, that's really interesting about that sort of levels of fun. I've never heard of that. And I certainly relate. It's very true. It's those experiences you have with mates where you do kind of have to go through a bit of a challenge.
Yeah.
They're the ones you really will talk about. And it is, yeah, it's overcoming a challenge. And I suppose, you know, what is fun, for me, and I really, really recognize this, is I have to achieve something every single day. And that's my idea of fun, rather than just kind of going and relaxing and enjoying myself. I'd be much more satisfied by achieving something. taking it back to that voyage, what do I miss? You know, there's so many simple things. And in a way, that's kind of what I miss, is that life is so simple out there. It's reduced to just the ocean, the weather, where you're going, and the simple things like sleeping and food. And even though the food I had on board wasn't particularly impressive all of the time, real lack of fresh stuff.
Was it all
really
just canned food?
To enjoy it. A lot of tinned food, a lot of sort of freeze-dried. I used to make my own bread. You can do a lot with things like powdered eggs. There's actually a really quite a good variety. Grandma and Mum helped with that as well as some professionals.
Did you fish at all?
Fishing, not a real strong point of me. The whole way around the world, the 210 days of the voyage, I only caught one fish.
So that's better than none.
Nearly as much fresh food as I would have liked. It's true. It's much better than nothing.
Have you seen The Life of Pi?
Yeah, and I don't think I have. I read the book years ago, but I haven't seen the movie.
It was a beautiful movie. It was about a boy. I know if you read the book, you know the synopsis, but it just seemed like the way that was put in. I always think of people sailing on boats, and I'm a very visual learner, so that's the first visual I always related to that. And he had to overcome so many obstacles on that boat, whether they were metaphors or reality. Did you have the lion moment? Was there the tiger moment on that boat? Was there one thing that maybe it was a star? Did you feel connected with anything other than yourself and the boat during that 7 months?
You do really kind of feel, obviously, a connection to the water, and it's so amazing. I could sit for hours and just watch it, the waves rolling by, which, is probably not that unexpected to be able to do that after you've been at sea by yourself for a few months. But I think the albatross, the big birds in the Southern Ocean, have a very sort of special connection. A lot of sailors sort of talk about this. They're really beautiful, graceful, and really kind of wise birds. And when one of those follows you for quite a few hours, that's very special. Amazing company down there as well.
Yeah.
What was the scariest moment when you were out there?
Certainly that storm in the Atlantic Ocean that I touched on. So we were expecting the boat to be rolled upside down. I knew these knockdowns, as we'd call them, were going to happen. So a couple of these happened on that particular night. But then another one, you can hear the roar of these waves approaching, and I knew this one was going to be bad. Horrible big roaring noise of a breaking wave, like at a beach.
Are you floating at this stage, or are you anchored?
No, you're sailing. You're constantly doing something. And at this point, I was actually downstairs because realizing it was too dangerous to sort of be on deck, and I'd done everything I could on deck, and then it was a matter of really just waiting it out and trusting that the boat was built strong enough to handle it. And this particular wave was a lot more powerful, so it rolled us upside down, but it's not a gentle roll at all. And once we're upside down, I'd had to walk up the walls to stand on the roof. We then got thrown into the trough of the next wave and pushed underwater quite a way as well. And the force of that wave, even though I was expecting these knockdowns and had already had a few, I just couldn't get my head around how the boat would be able to survive. I didn't think it would be structurally sound. And if a boat's not structurally sound in those conditions, your backup plan at this point is a life raft, which is really a glorified pool toy, and kind of in winds that are like that of a sort of cyclone and 10-meter waves, a blow-up pool toy is not a really good backup plan.
So what happens? Is the lifeguard, I'm just thinking your scenario right now. Did you, literally think you were going to make it?
There was a very serious moment, and this is something that took a couple of years to sort of be comfortable talking about because, to start with, I don't like the idea of scaring the people around you by sort of admitting this, and certainly wasn't at the time. I was very much playing it down as much as possible, and I always did under-exaggerate how bad things were at different times because I didn't want to hurt people. But there was quite genuinely a moment where I'm going, I just can't understand how we will survive this. But then really amazing kind of moment of clarity in realizing that I had to. It was that simple. I couldn't put my team, my family through anymore. And it was the most powerful thing realizing that and just realizing that I was going to do anything, absolutely anything to pull through. And it sort of didn't quite come to that because the reality was the boat was structurally sound still, just minor damage. But, yeah, it was an amazing thing to realise that I was going to do absolutely anything. I don't know what that was going to be or how it was going to happen, but it was very powerful, that thought.
Who was the first person that you spoke to after the event?
I was speaking to people the whole time.
Oh, the whole time through.
The actual particular event. Oh, No, I mean, there were a number of hours. Sorry, I mean, talking the whole during the whole voyage, I was chatting to people. I had a satellite phone, which was incredible, and radio and things like that as well.
Yep.
And after that particular storm, I was in contact pretty frequently because to sort of keep people updated because they knew I was in a bad situation, and you know, it's pretty horrible leaving people waiting. and I had a team manager who I was speaking to because mum and dad was just too emotional to be speaking to them at times like that. Yeah, you needed someone, and I needed someone to kind of actually say, all right, things are a bit tough out here. You know, I didn't want to admit that to mum and dad, so it was important to have that other person there.
Yeah, especially at 16 years of age, like you would have felt like a 50-year-old at the time. It like the amount of life experience you just got from that, just that moment, would have been amazing.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I felt the next day, was I felt like I'm 10 years older. I've totally gone backwards since, but that's exactly the feeling it was. You know, I'm sort of bruised up and physically, you know, exhausted, but mentally I just felt like I aged 10 years. That was exactly how, yeah, I felt. It was quite a weird thing to feel, really. It kind of, you know, the feeling shook off after a few days a bit as well, but it really hit me.
So are they going to make it into a movie now, Jess?
Yeah, so there's a script and a director and sort of the final piece of everything else are coming together very slowly. It's been a slow process over the last few years, but it's kind of all there ready to go, which is really exciting. And I really love the director that we have now. She's a female, which is fantastic because there are way too few female Australian directors as well. And so, yeah, I really like where the script's at. That's taken a bit of work to kind of make sure, from my perspective, that it's kind of technically accurate. And I'm looking forward to sort of seeing it all come together.
Jessica, we know your time is valuable, and we really appreciate you sharing the space with us. So we only have a few more questions that we ask all of our guests here on the Vision Board podcast. And I'll get it started with this one. Jessica Watson, if three of your closest friends were sitting around a table and you weren't in the room, what would they say about you?
I hope they would only say good things. and I really make a point of standing up for my mates behind their backs, so I would like to think they would do the same for me. I don't know. I'm pretty kind of quiet and serious, and I would hope that they kind of know me as being somebody who looks out for their mates, so I would hope that that would be it.
Very good. Second one.
Okay, second one. Jess, growing up, what posters did you have on your bedroom wall?
Oh, wow. I had pictures of 10-meter waves, lots of sailboats, weather charts, a lot of traveling sort of destinations that I wanted to go to, but there was a lot of stuff, you know, pretty, yeah, full-on stuff about sailing around the world. That was there from an early age, and that was pretty obvious. I think mum was starting to get inklings of what was going on in my head by what was on my walls.
Yeah, very, very, that's a very interesting, we always get so much different feedback from that question, but with you, I wasn't shocked to hear that at all.
Yeah, yeah. It was pretty clear.
Yeah, for sure. And our final one. So, Jessica Watson, you're having a private dinner party. You get to invite 5 guests. The only rules are the guests, they can't be any family or friends. You can invite anyone that's dead or alive. Who are you inviting to dinner?
Oh, that's such a hard one, because I definitely would love to invite my family because, you know, I never get to see enough of them and always enjoy time with them. I suppose maybe I'd do something just like inviting, you know, the Australians of the Year or anyone involved with like the Australian Geographic Society or something like that. You know, they're kind of Adventurers of the Year, and that would be kind of an absolute sure bet to get some great conversation. And I really find that those people are just such genuine, sort of selfless, amazing people. You know, I've been so lucky to spend time with, you know, people like that. I think that would be a really safe bet.
Jess, you've been amazing. You're a legend. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us. Before you go, where can the people continue to follow your journey online and on social media?
Yeah, sure. I'm on social media. You can find me, I think I'm just Jessica Watson on Facebook. To be honest, that's probably the main sort of social media that I use. And you can also check out some of the blogs I write for my startup, marinestartupdecky.com.
And how do you spell Decky, just for everyone out there?
D-E-C-K-E-E.
There you go, everyone. Get following Jess.
Get involved, guys. Jessica, we appreciate you.
And guys, that was Jessica Watson.
Yeah, how about that story about the boat capsizing and being out in the middle of the open sea?
Man, I was trying to visualize it, and I'm thinking about all this. I forgot to ask her, how do you think water just gushes into the place?
Man, like, I just think of like every Hollywood movie, like White Squall or Life of Pi, when just gnarly catastrophes happen on water. They usually never end well.
That Life of Pi, I had to turn it off the other day. It was getting too scary. The tiger was trying to eat him.
Oh, Tristan. Now, Life of Pi was one of my favorites, especially when you research how they filmed that. They filmed it all on a green screen.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so like you could do a behind-the-scenes look, and the actor, the young man, literally does the whole film in like a wooden boat that's in a studio with a green screen that they just add the CGI in the background. But yeah, you're right. Those are real-life scenarios for her. When she is expecting the storm, so the anticipation, the anxiety, the stress, being alone, I guess you're really in that fight, flight, or freeze mode. And they talk about that's how you grow. You got to be uncomfortable.
Hell yeah. I can't wait to recap this one on Friday with you, Johnny. Next on the show, guys, Wednesday, we've got Lane Norton. Lane is an expert in nutrition. He's a doctor. Yeah, we call him Bio Lane. And he's
former bodybuilding champ and powerlifting champ. What's that tell you?
He's got a number of businesses. So we're going to have a great chat with Lane. So stay tuned for that. And then Friday recap, we're going to do it a little bit differently this week. We've got Stephen Wonderboy Thompson actually joining us. So,
in the episode.
Yeah, so what we'll do, we'll start off with a bit of a recap, and then once Steve's ready to go, we'll get Steve on the line, and we will preview his upcoming welterweight championship fight with Tyron Woodley. So I'm looking forward to seeing that one, man.
For sure, guys. We appreciate you, all the love and support. Continue to help the cause. We'll continue to bring it.
Hell yeah. We'll see you soon, guys.
Peace.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching an itch, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working harder. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are two for two.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.